So to quickly recapitulate, mind is the form maker, what we call in Indian thought as Maya. And therefore, there is a common understanding or a misunderstanding that it is Maya that has built the worlds. In one sense, yes, it builds forms. But it does not have by itself the knowledge that comes from the supermind. So it is the divine who has built the worlds, and it is his Maya. When before these forms are built, they come into existence as we experience them, there is a status, the status of the divine mind or the Vidyamai Maya, if you want to call it, where the unity of substance is intact. Where this substance comes from is a subject probably next February we'll touch about when we talk about matter, etc. So it is aware of the unity of substance. Even now the unity of substance is there, but we have sort of the lower Maya or the Avidyamai Maya, which is where our mind as we experience, and the cosmic mind in its lower sense, it makes us forget it. So we don't understand that there is a unity of substance. But if we look deep inside, and sometimes we can experience this unity of substance, mothers experience it, yogis experience it, and sometimes in certain exceptional moments, human beings can experience even physically the pain of somebody else within themselves. So there is this two Maya, and the mind has to build forms. Why it builds forms, all this is for later. Now, life is the energy which animates the form. So we have the car, the body of the car, and that form is built by the engineer. That engineer is the mind. And then there is the fuel, which is the energy. This again, this energy is not limited to the car. The same petrol, diesel, solar, electrical, whatever we may say, is a cosmic energy. It's available everywhere. But for the car, it is given for a particular purpose. And as we know, we have to keep on refueling it. So this energy is of various kinds. We speak of the fivefold movements. There is a lower energy, which is also an energy. There are some people who draw a lot of energy when they are in a party, or when they are gossiping, or when they are enjoying the food, not due to the food, but the enjoyment of the food. Sexual activity during that time, excitement. But this lower energy tends to ultimately eat upon the form. So the form is originally not, because it invariably goes into the excess, the demand that it puts upon the form, the stress that it puts upon the form is excess than what the form can supply. So it begins to eat upon the form, and because it's a lower form of energy, degeneration, degradation, diseases, disorders, all that, turbulence, quarrel, anger, all this is part of that lower nature. Lust, fear, all this tends to enter because it's that kind of energy. Even fear is a kind of energy. People, they run when they are afraid. So it's an energy which pushes you. See how they, when the people get angry, how much energy that comes. Afterwards, this energy exhausts both the one who is getting angry and the other person. Why? Because it's that form of energy which, like the asuric rakshasic form, it eats upon. So it is what is hunger, that is death. Then there is higher forms of energy, thought, speech, intellectual activity, and of course seeking for truth, divine light. All this is higher forms of energy. And that's why, because speech is a higher form of energy. Udaan, that's how. You know, it is fed by the higher prana. That's why when mother says gossip is like, especially when gossip is combined with slanderous words and what one can call as abusive words, it is like committing spiritual suicide. So it's very interesting. Because this energy which is meant to walk speech, speech is the outer expression of thought. So thought is meant to uplift us. So the Vedic Rishis speak about the ninefold thought and the tenfold thought. So these thoughts are meant to uplift us. They get expressed in speech. So if one gossips, this which is meant to uplift us, that begins to drag us down with the same violent speed. It's like an aircraft which is flying high. When it crashes, it's a dangerous crash. Nothing survives. Because when that energy is pulled down, that's why she speaks about. But many people draw a lot of energy from gossip. You know, as they say, one can speak over the phone for half an hour without knowing whom one is speaking to. That may be still okay, but when one is speaking nonsense. So that's what, why all these things which are told in spiritual practice are not based on some moral diktats. They are based on solid scientific foundations which we do not know now. Fortunately, there is also samana, the energy which tries to harmonize everything. Vyana, which takes into account the universe energy in the environment with which this energy is conterminous. That's why one should be careful of the company one keeps, the kind of people with one associates. So all this is a whole science which we read, which are the implications. Then why death intervenes? Simply because energy in a life, in a particular life form, deep within it knows it is part of a cosmic energy. So it strives and strains. That's its nature. So when it strives and strains to regain that cosmic energy, it invariably spills beyond the form. It seeks for more energy from here, there, everywhere. So when it seeks from other forms of energy, after all, that is also individualized energy, unless one can open to sunlight and trees around. But beyond a point, that attacks us. So there is, because form, every form needs to affirm itself. The first law of life is self-affirmation of the form, because something is happening on the basis of the form. So every form tries to assert itself and seek its own affirmation. So beyond a point, and these forms are not just material forms as we understand. They are forms in creation which are of a subtle make. And all these kinds of energy, like illness. What is illness? It's adverse forces, formations of mind, all of them try to, once their form, form is given, it tries to maintain itself. And how does it maintain itself? Particularly some of these adverse forces which are thrown out during illness, or after post-illness, or after death. These forces, they are elemental energies. They are come out of the bodily form, but they want to continue to exist in some way. That little greed, that little lust and anger is thrown out. It wants to have a life of its own. That's how Mother says, they have an independent life of their own. The life may be short or long. So what do they do? One is that they try to attack other individuals and possess them. This was the whole principle behind, you know, if you visit a shamshan, you come back, you know, and take a bath, and there is a ritual purification. All that was meant because formations come. And that's how Mother put it, that in India, because people are very sensitive to these elemental forces, energies, so therefore they burn. Because, you know, by burning it goes away. Washing is another method. Though burning has other complications, but that we need not discuss now. So this is how death intervenes. Because you can't constantly feed on the energy of all life which is around. It will also feed upon us. And that's a constant process. So some of these adverse forces, particularly suddenly after death, there are disembodied beings. And these disembodied beings sometimes don't even know they have died. I know story of a young man who had died. He was in the police, and plenty of stories I know, but one of them I know direct, I mean all of them are direct, but which had hit me very strongly, is that he was police inspector who had stopped a vehicle to check for its whatever license, and suddenly he was hit from behind by another car which was coming, and he died. And obviously his wife went into a lot of depression. So I happened to ask always that, was there any indication? Did you see any dream later on? So she described a dream where she says, yes, he actually narrated to me what happened. Nobody knew what had happened. But he narrated that, he says, I don't know what happened. Next moment I saw that my body they are taking, and I tried to move my hand but nothing could be done. And he says, I don't know what happened. Then he says, possibly a car hit me, but I don't know what happened. He didn't know that he has died for some time. So what does such a being do, the disembodied? It wants to somehow survive somewhere, because this is the instinct of life, to preserve itself. So sometimes they latch on to other human beings. That's how Mother describes the Spanish flu, where there was that major who died and he didn't know. People who die with bomb blasts, so post-war, all these things. So when they die, of suddenly they are thrown out of their bodies. They don't know what has happened. So they try to create a kind of, they coalesce because forms are no more there. And this can, in addition, cause more fear, terror, because it's a coalition of fear, let's put it like that. Everybody is afraid, last moment. And all this cloud further attacks people and fills them with fear. That's how corona spread so fast, because of the intense fear that each death was generating. And thanks to us doctors who added, you know, fear to the fear, not fuel to fire. So this fear, and at times they even attack and make somebody ill because they start drawing energy from the form. It wants to survive. What can you do? So poor fellow, you know, he wants to somehow survive. So it begins to draw energy. And one has to learn to, you know, it requires a tremendous occult effort. And of course, the divine protection. So all this is a play which takes place in cosmos. So that which is eating also gets eaten. Also, when the demand is more and the fuel cannot sustain it, we have eaten a limited amount of whatever be the means that with which we are drawing energy. And then the demand is put too much. Then what does life do? It begins to eat upon the form. So all kinds of things happen, go on in the system. And the mother speaks about it, that there are four forms through which we can draw energy. One is the inconscient, that is what normally food is, invariably associated with that. Second is from the environment around. Some people particularly are very open, who go into a nice little park or, you know, beautiful place, hopefully not much contaminated by human presence. Then they can draw energy from the, you know, all that is around. One can even come in touch with the divine presence, which is in all things. That was Nishtha, Woodrow Wilson's daughter's, Margaret Wilson, experience when she went to a park. Suddenly she felt an intense joy rushing into her. And she's 15, 16 year old. And she just thinks, I wish God could have this joy. He does not know this joy that I am feeling. Then she felt, initially she felt happy. I wish God could share this happiness. He doesn't know. He is up above. And then she is invaded by so much joy that she doesn't know how to contain it. And she hears this, that, you know, who else but I am enjoying this. So she is totally taken aback. Of course, she ultimately came here. Her body couldn't bear all the inrush. So it's a very complex dynamics. So there are bodies which are not ready to bear the inrush of tremendous life energy. So that's why people who awaken Kundalini and draw energy from all kinds of things, if the body is not ready, it can even break down in the process. So this is a whole complex dynamics, because life is energy, but it is not just an energy in one form, another form, which is true, it is trapped inside. But all the time it is wanting to join the cosmos, and there is an interchange. So third layer is the vital interchange, which Mother says is not very healthy. Too much of gossiping around with people, socializing. And the fourth is to draw from the pure sources above. That's the purest, clean energy. That's solar energy for us. So, by above is not sun, but divine, the sun of divine consciousness. So this is what we read. But still, in that case, if somebody by some means could all the time live in the divine consciousness, so one should not die, technically. But still death will come. That's what Sri Aurobindo is trying to explain to us. And that's where we had stopped. That why death is still associated. So we are on page 205. But apart from all these necessities, but one thing we learn that when we treat environment, we should treat it with lot of care and respect because everything is living. So often we hear about landslides, we hear about, you know, suddenly waters. We don't, there is a very nice book I had read. And there the person said, you know, these mountains, when there is a landslide, it's something like when we have a wound, we want to repair it and we throw off the slough. So they throw off the slough. Why? Because people have built all kinds of huts and everything and they are carelessly treading, carelessly moving about, cutting trees. So while there is a physical angle to it, there is a subtle angle to it. They are all living, even a mountain is living. And so at some point it reacts. And when it reacts, there is a cascade. Because these movements of nature are on a mega scale. They don't care human beings, so many human beings, that is for us. So this was known in Vedic civilization where we see that everything was treated with respect, with love, with care. That's why when Hanuman brings Sanjeevani booty, so at one level there is happiness. But the problem is it has disrupted the balance. So what does Lord Ram tell him after the Sanjeevani booty emergency is over? He says, take it back and place it on the mountain. So the monkeys can't understand. I mean, Vanara, not monkeys. So they tell him, we will need it because who knows, so many will be injured. He says, no, you can't create this imbalance. So Hanuman goes back and keeps it. In the process, some portion falls at one place, I think, Dronagiri and couple of places it falls because he is supposed to put it back because it disturbs the balance of nature, creation. So this is the whole approach that in ancient times Sanatan Dharma had, because everything is conscious, everything is living. So when you take energy, take only that much which you need. This is why all these principles came up. But we have now developed a use and throw utilitarian principle, like, you know, doesn't matter, take a big cone of ice cream. If you can't eat it, throw it away. This is a very dangerous culture. Because when we do that, then there is a hitting bag. That's what we had read on page 205. And on the same page, down below. But apart from all these necessities, there is the one fundamental necessity of the nature... and object of embodied life itself, which is to seek infinite experience on a finite basis. And since the form, the basis, by its very organization, limits the possibility of experience, this can only be done by dissolving it and seeking new forms. So this is what Hiranyakashipu did know. So he asked all possible ways that I should not die. Had he read the Life Divine, he would have understood this a foolish boon. I shouldn't die like this, I shouldn't die. Neither day nor night, nor inside nor outside. He didn't know. That is not the reason. Nature will find the way to death. Because that fellow has to evolve into Ravan and Kumbhakarna, further into Kansa and Shishupal, further into the divine. He'll stop evolving. Because it has to have infinite experiences. And in one lifetime, on a finite basis, experiences are limited. And that's the story we all perhaps know. Prahlad, who was supposed to be Rani Lakshmi by his horse. And Jhansi ki Rani's horse. And he was here and he asked mother once in letter, mother, I want an American wife. And it seems mother wrote, not in this life. And he died after 2 days. So you can't get all these experiences. Though nowadays, if you see, there is an evolution fast forward. So how much ever we may curse TV, internet, at one level it is also true that this mind, because it can take virtual, it is the ultimate experiencing agency. Senses are only giving the input. In one life, one can experience so much because it's evolution fast forward. This not to say that we should have unlimited access to TV because it may be an unregulated fast forward, which is also dangerous. And it cannot be the same as on a finite basis. And since the form, okay, for the soul, having once limited itself by concentrating on the moment and the field, is driven to seek its infinity again by the principle of succession, by adding moment to moment and thus storing up a time experience which it calls its past. In that time, it moves through successive fields, successive experiences or lives, successive accumulations of knowledge, capacity, enjoyment, and all this it holds in subconscious or superconscious memory as its fund of past acquisition in time. This we all know. Favorite pastime is photographs, and Google Photos has made it even worse because it keeps throwing up suddenly. So through this we relive a memory. Ah, you know how it. So still something in us has lived that experience, and it is getting integrated with the soul. And the interesting part is that even if that experience was a dangerous one, sometimes a narrow escape, but when we narrate it, there is a touch of delight of having escaped a near. You see, that's the interesting part, that life ultimately converts all experiences into delight. That's how it does it. Even when somebody goes through an experience, common experience of heartbreak, so during that time, it's like the world is broken, not just the heart. But after 30 years or 40 years, when he narrates to his son or daughter, it happens, you will laugh one day, don't worry, the poor fellow doesn't understand that my world is crashing. All experiences ultimately get transmuted into delight. But one has to allow time, that's the whole thing. So this is the fun. So these past experiences, the reason why they are stored up is not because there is Mr. Chitragupta. Chitragupta is there as an entity, but his not purpose is holding a big ledger in which he has written, drawing a line, good deeds, bad deeds, good deed. I mean, just imagine of all the people. But everything gets documented because it's a fund of experience. So sometimes when we go to a place, there is a deja vu feeling. Something similar we have experienced. And this goes on from life to life as our evolutionary fund. To this process, change of forms is essential. And for the soul involved in individual body, change of form means dissolution of the body in subjection to the law and compulsion of the all life in the material universe. All life will not allow one form to just keep on experiencing here, there, everywhere. First of all, it can't experience being in one finite body. Second, this is all life. As I said, it has to occupy a place. The balance of energy has to be maintained. So after a point of time, the soul itself makes a choice to withdraw because it has to experience something maybe higher, something different, depending upon the level. Sometimes it can be as one four-year-old boy had got killed in a car accident, strangely crawling almost near and then killed. And when mother was asked about it, she said he had taken birth just to experience this one thing. So we cannot imagine what kind of experiences the soul needs for its own evolution. So all this happens. To this process, change of form is essential. To its law of supply of the material of form and demand on the material, to its principle of constant intershock and the struggle of the embodied life to exist in a world of mutual devouring, and this is the law of death. And that's why the age-old wisdom that after a certain age you should not venture too much. Of course, a person with a strong vitality can do it, but otherwise there is the all life which is constantly devouring. So that's why there is death, the law of death. This then is the necessity and justification of death, page 206. Not as a denial of life, but as a process of life. See, we understand this when in one life a child wants to go abroad to study or work. And parents sometimes want to hold back. But if you really see at one level, the child needs to go, he needs to experience if such is his urge and the possibility is there. This is how one grows. That's why when Utadi once asked mother that my relatives are calling me to UK for something, I've forgotten what, should I go or not? She said, you go, it'll bring wideness. What is that wideness? Wideness helps us to understand different standpoints, different ways of life. Even traveling within India, one of the things which was, India is a world in its own right. So this used to be there when child grows up, then you send him on Deshatan, that's what it was called. That the adulthood and the maturity comes when once the child goes around and sees the world. We can say sees India, but also the world. And if we don't do it, this will come knocking at our doors. So one reason why the Western civilization, the British and the Mughals came is because we were developing very well, but we were developing within a closed environment. So they challenged us. Because you have to suddenly grow wide, you have to take a contrary experience. This Shurbindo has described this, that one reason why it happened. Whenever there is the shock of another civilization, it challenges us. So we have to adapt, we have to grow, various ways we have to grow. So there are subtle reasons why things happen, and in this century particularly, it is happening more and more because this challenge is coming from every side. Death is necessary because eternal change of form is the sole immortality to which the finite living substance can aspire. And eternal change of experience, the soul infinity to which the finite mind involved in living body can attain. This would explain many things that otherwise we cannot understand. There is this need for different experiences. It's inbuilt within the system. And it may not awaken, and that we'll see next, that it may not be there if either we are too much identified with material life, like I don't want to leave my village. But that's not a very healthy thing. You come back to the village, but go around, see, and then come back, because you'll be enriched, you'll become wide. So what is the sting of death? Few lines below, Shubhendu says, it is only the absence of freedom. The compulsion, the struggle, the pain, the subjection to something that appears to be not self, which makes this necessary and salutary change appear terrible and undesirable to our mortal mentality. If we could decide, okay, now I want to leave. Ikshamrityu will be one of the things which will come. I think it has already come within the purview of the evolved beings. Ikshamrityu, one decides when to withdraw. This one. But when we don't know when death will come. Second, if we are living in the illusory surface personality, Dr. So-and-so, Mr. So-and-so, then there is the fear, not self. We don't know what that we must... Poet Harivansh Rai Bachchan writes, no, is par priye, tum ho, madhu hai, us par na jane kya hoga? At least I have my drinks and I have you by my side. Who knows what will be there on the other side? So when one is identified with this small personality, so there is the fear of its dissolution. And the more successful one is, the more this problem comes, because one doesn't know what's going to be on the other side. But when we begin to live in the soul, then there is no fear, because the soul knows it has lived through many forms and names. It knows the eternal. It knows the one soul in all beings. That's why tato na vijugupsate. He shrinks from nothing. There is no fear of death. One of the first effects of discovery of the soul is that the fear of death goes away. Because you discover that, you know, it's an intuitive sense as well as one can actually experience that one has lived through number of lives. Maulana Rum says that, he says, why should I be afraid of dying? I died a stone, became a plant. I died a plant, became a tree. I died a tree and became an animal. I died an animal, became a man. Why should I be afraid of dying? So you discover that. It's not an intellectual doctrine. One senses that. And therefore death holds no fear, because you know you are just a changeover of clothes. Death is but a changing of the robes to wait in wedding garments at the eternal gate. Can't resist the temptation for the Hindi part. Mrityu hai paridhan badal karna pratiksha. वधु वस्त्र में चिर प्रेमी का शाश्वत वर का, हु वुड बी अफ्रेड? शुभिंदोज पोयम, डेथ इज बट ए चेंजिंग, सी चेंजिंग ऑफ रोब्स एवरीबडी सेज, बट दिस इज द ब्यूटी ऑफ द लॉर्ड हाउ ही पुट्स इट, डेथ इज बट ए चेंजिंग ऑफ द रोब्स टू वेट इन वेडिंग गार्मेंट्स एट द इटर्नल्स गेट्स. वट इज द वेडिंग गार्मेंट? द सोल इन इट्स ऑल इट्स द साइकिक बींग, इट इज द गार्मेंट वोवन अराउंड दैट इमॉर्टल सोल. सो वेयर इज द फियर? Whom are we going to meet? Our beloved. So there is no fear. So, but when we are identified with this surface personality, want to prolong it ad infinitum, that cannot be allowed. Nature won't allow it. And that is the fear. That is par priya tumha madhuve. All this is there today. What can be tomorrow? And it's true that when mother was asked about Beethoven, in his next life, he would probably, you know, make even greater music. Mother said, who knows whether he'll come back as a musician or not? This was the question. She said, who knows? He may come back as a shoemaker. It is the same problem being approached from a different angle. And that is the logic behind don't condemn people and shoemaker and servant. Who knows where one will land up? That's how I know a very rich man doled out his money. He had earned in Africa and got too much of money, and you know, he was very arrogant at that point of time. He's a wonderful person, so I shouldn't say. He was narrating a story, and he said at 40 when he came back from Africa, yeah, I'm a rich man, I can do anything, I can enjoy life, this, that. And then some people approached him, said, why don't you have so much money, why don't you make a vanaprastha ashram? He said, what, vanaprastha, people want to run away from world, you see, engage like me, earn money. So they didn't say anything. Then they asked him, requested him, there is a Guruji giving talk, why don't you come and listen? He said, what Guruji, what talk? He said, you come and listen. No, anyways, we know you as a friend. He said, okay. The only line that captured his mind was, in this life you have all these riches, who knows what you will have in next life. So you should use it wisely. This got into him, ki yes, this life I have earned so much. Being a Hindu, he believed in other life. Maybe in next life, I will be a pauper. So let me use this money wisely. So he started using that money wisely and rightly. And he's such a wonderful person, as I said. He went through everything, became ultimately a devotee of Mother and Sri Aurobindo, has created such a beautiful place on the banks of Kaveri. And he has named this place Sri Aurobindo Dham. It's in for us from Bangalore, I've been there. What a wonderful story. So you suddenly realize, but some people hold on to it all their life to their outer personality. But that is not our true self, that is going to anyways be destroyed by nature. So people who often lament that somebody has dementia, oh, see, such a person, don't. The inner being is continuing to progress. This is not the person that one saw outside, who was a jolly good fellow. The real person is inside. And this is so important to understand, because I have even heard people, somebody speaking of somebody here, oh, he was such a brilliant professor and see, he had dementia. 5 years he didn't know what is happening. Are you? That's not important. The brilliant professor is the outer side. Anyways, death will take it away. But the inner being who was a devotee of the mother, that is progressing. That's why euthanasia is so absurd. So anyways, all these things come. So what makes us feel the sting of death is the suddenness, the absence of freedom, the compulsion, the struggle, the pain, and subjection to something that appears to be not self, which makes this necessity of salutary change appear terrible and undesirable to our mortal mentality. It is the sense of being devoured, broken up, destroyed, or forced away, which is the sting of death, and which even the belief in personal survival of death cannot wholly abrogate. Form, identification of the form with the body. That's why when mother was asked that how to make death, she was asked whether it's painful or not. So if we are very attached to the body, it is painful. It's not painful in that sense. But the 101 cords which attach the subtle being to the physical body, through the heart, that's how the Upanishad describes, and my friend Anand, Dr. Anand, had this clear experience once. So not to go into this story because there are too many stories. But there is a pain of death when these are like unscrewing. If you tightly, you know what happens when a bottle has, the cap is badly sealed and it is to be broken. That's how the pain comes. But if one is detached during life to the physical body, she said that if you are detached, you don't experience that. It doesn't mean we don't do what we need to do. The body is the vehicle. Take care of it. But don't make your car your identity. Don't make your house your identity. Don't make your job your identity. Don't make your name, fame your identity or your wealth your identity. These things are given today. This is the logic behind these things. Okay. So because of this, now what happens? Now in ignorance, life, energy, mind, sense of individuality is all trapped in the form. But deep within there is a consciousness of the all. Because everything has come from there. Supermind is standing behind. So what happens? There is everywhere in life. Plants, we see there is the differentiation, there is the unity. All plants are one plant. But this is the differentiation, which is different plants. Equally, it is true of all animal life. Different animals, but behind the same way of animal life. Same with human beings. Outer differences, inner unity. Same way we can say about all creation. So there is always the differentiation, there is the unity. So this differentiation is a very big process through which that Shrivita will reveal to us in book 2. So that's for later. How the differentiation? But imagine to try to create differentiation when the basic truth is unity. It's a very challenging thing. And nature succeeds it. How? Through material forms which are so rigid. Unity is that truth. But differentiations have to be created. There is a purpose. So that differentiation is held. But like a bird in a cage, pankh fadfadate hain. That's why we have the song. Pankh hote to ud jati re. Rasiya o Balma. Balma is of course the divine. If I had wings, I would have flown. This need is there to fly out of the cage. But it cannot. So what does it do? There is born in human beings the desire. So desire also serves a purpose. As Shrivinda says, desire is the helper, desire is the bar. If you want to take away desire, and that's what Buddha meant. People have misinterpreted desire gave birth to this creation. Not from above downwards, because that was not Buddha's purpose to explain creation. But when you see from below upwards, it is desire that builds. Because of desire, human beings are moved toward this, that expansion, growth. It's the first step of life which has affirmed itself, now wants to expand. How does it do it? The mechanism is desire. So when Buddha was speaking, he was speaking of practically suffering comes from that. Not creation is not the result of desire. It's the result of delight. So ultimately, if you look at life at its highest, it is delight. If you look at its lowest, it is struggling to emerge, imprisoned in matter. So what comes to help it wake up is desire. So that depends on where we look at it. So Sri Aurobindo reveals to us the attempt of the individual, same page 206, few lines from below, the attempt of the individual, the living atom, to maintain and aggrandize itself. See, individual is describing as living atom. It's constituted of atoms, this body. But it's living. So living atom, to maintain and aggrandize itself is the whole sense of desire. A physical, vital, moral, mental increase by a more and more all-embracing experience, a more and more all-embracing position, absorption, assimilation, enjoyment, is the inevitable, fundamental, ineradicable, mark the word, ineradicable impulse of existence. It gets eradicated only when it is fulfilled in the infinite. Just to cut that story. Once divided and individualized, yet ever secretly conscious of its all-embracing, all-possessing infinity. That's why it is seeking through desire to embrace and to have all these experiences. It's very interesting, in Indian thought we have the word for the reality. This is a word called Brahman. What Brahman actually means is very interesting. Of course, Brahman is not Brahma. Brahman comes from the root Braha, which means to grow, to expand. Brahata. So it's impulse in creation, to unfold, to grow, to expand. That's why it comes as, at one level, as inevitable and important. And where does this stop, Brahat? It stops when it meets Brahman, the reality, the infinite. So this is the whole logic of it. And on page 207, in the conscious mind, that which was still only a vital hunger in subconscious life transforms itself into higher forms. Hunger in the vital parts becomes craving of desire in the mentalized life. Actually, mind enjoys. It's not the senses. Senses are only conduits. Try cutting off the mind by inner operation. For instance, when you are eating food, even your most favorite food, let the mind be concentrated on the divine. Oh, maza chala jayega. But it'll transmute itself into something greater. And it can apply to all activities of desire. Because ultimately, mind is the rasagrahan instrument. Mind has built forms, individualities for experience. So, higher forms, vital parts becomes craving of desire in the mentalized life, straining of will in the intellectual or thinking life. This movement of desire must and ought to continue, mark the words, until the individual has grown sufficiently so that he can now at last become master of himself and by increasing union with the infinite possessor of his universe. So people want to just completely think that they can do away with desire, just become inert. It doesn't help. It will continue in the mind. And that is dangerous. Of course, that's what Shri Krishna tells Arjun. That you are saying that you want to leave all this war and go away. Arjun, don't be a mithyachari. So what is mithyachar? When the mind, sometimes not conscious mind, but the subconscious mind, nurturing these desires. So there is no progress simply by throwing away this law. One cannot. Of course, sannyas is another way where we forcibly shut the senses, shut all things, and that's nirvana. But desire is the law through which one must pass before one transcends it. Short of infinite, one cannot. This seems to be a justification for desire. At one level it is. But when one does sadhana, it is understood. You have to go, one has gone through all these stages, then only desire changes into aspiration. That's how he explains. Desire is the lever by which the divine life principle, that means the life principle in the divine, so it is the lever, affects its end of self-affirmation in the universe, and the attempt to extinguish it in the interest of inertia is a denial of the divine life principle. Attempt to stifle desire in the interest of inertia. Let me not do anything, it is all desire. Ultimately, let me lie like a stone. That's how Sri Aurobindo had said that, you know, first to be transformed in that case would be the that blotting thing on my table. Because that's, it has to go through that evolutionary process. You can't cut it short. And what is the sign you have gone through is conscious aspiration. That is the sign one has gone through. Because then if aspiration is born, then conscious aspiration, then one has gone through it. Otherwise, one will be brought back. So what does one do short of that? Sanyama. That's how it is described in Indian thought. Exercise self-mastery. These are the words that Sri Aurobindo has used also. Self-mastery. A will not to be, which is necessarily ignorance. So shunning desire, falling into inertia is a will not to be, which is necessarily ignorance. For one cannot cease to be individually except by being infinitely. Desire too can only cease rightly by becoming the desire of the infinite and satisfying itself with a supernal fulfillment and an infinite satisfaction in the all-possessing bliss of the infinite. That's why Payo Param Vishram Ram Saman Prabhu Nahi Kahu. When you reach the feet of the divine, then there is the fulfillment. But we can't feign it. That just because we have heard desire is bad and we don't even have aspiration for the divine and we just immediately cast it, it won't work. We have to exercise. The mind should control it, regulate it. And that also he'll describe as the way. Instead of devouring, it should change into love. And he'll explain that at great length. Meanwhile, it has to progress from the type of a mutually devouring hunger to the type of a mutual giving, of an increasingly joyous sacrifice of interchange. So what to do then if desire is there and there is not yet the aspiration, conscious aspiration, one has not yet found the infinite, what does one do? So the first law of desire is hunger, that is death, to eat away, to, that's why coveting. That's why the Isha Upanishad says, Tena Tyaktena Bhunjita Magrida Kasya Svidhanam. Grid, to hold, to possess. This is me, mine. Instead of that, learn to give and take. That Sri Aurobindo will describe it. Interchange. This is the way universe, that's what is becomes yajna in the higher stages. That's the law of sacrifice, Sri Krishna says, with which I have instructed Prajapati to make the worlds, the law of sacrifice. That is the Purusha Yajna, where everything in creation has come out of the one Purusha. So that Yajna at our level becomes the law of conscious interchange. Somebody who is only taking, taking, taking and not giving. But giving doesn't mean at the same level. Something has to be given. As the mother says, the greatest gift is the charity of wisdom. That's why the Brahmins, what did they give? They gave only wisdom. But the state was supposed to take care of them. They never coveted money. They were not supposed to. Now, of course, for every Harikatha, 1 week you take. Not in, people say that don't give me check. I have heard from someone, don't give check. Because check has to be deposited. This is income tax. Now, this is nonsense. But that's how it has, you know, because the law of desire is there. You may be a Pandit, you have read the Shastras, but you are still having this. You have not transcended. You have not applied the Sayama. Whereas the true law, this, instead of devouring, wanting, possessing, one has to learn to give and then take. Later on, there is a fourth status, but let's not jump the stages because each stage is so wonderful, interesting. The lower, the individual gives himself to other individuals and receives them back in exchange. The lower gives itself to the higher and the higher to the lower so that they may be fulfilled in each other. And that's why the Gita says something very interesting. He says, when you do the yajna, you should do, that's about life, not just yajna. You should eat the leftover after you have given everything. Otherwise, you are a thief. Now you see. That's why Sri Aurobindo says, I have been using 14 annas on myself. That's an exaggeration, but Lord, you know, he was always giving in nature. One thing that we see in Madan Sri Aurobindo is just giving, 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 giving. So he says that, you know, and 2 annas for God. So why the Gita says? Because if you do that, you are a thief. You will be bound by this ignorance more and more. You give. When you give to the higher, then the higher will give to you what you need. And that is the law of yoga shema vahamyam, after one has given. To the, that's, LIC has adopted it, but it's, well, wrongly, but there is one truth in it. First you give, so you give the premium. Then when you die, now they have different plans, so sorry, they have nice plans while living. But when you die, somebody, in your wife or somebody will receive a huge amount. So, you know, so first you have to give. This is the higher law. The lower law is only wanting, wanting, wanting. Second is, okay, I have received so much, maybe I'll also give a little bit. That's why those who do not give, having received, they are thieves. That's how the Gita puts it. That give, then whatever is left over. There's beautiful stories in Upanishads to that extent, to Sasti, Chakrayan, but anyways, time always there. The human gives itself to the divine and the divine to the human. What a beautiful line. First you give. Why? Because there is no place left for the divine to enter. The all in the individual gives itself to the all in the universe and receives its realized universality as a divine recompense. So when you live for all, the divine who is behind the all will take care of you. That's how there are these great ones who live only for, not for their selfishness. So you see, this is the law of desire, which is, it's still a desire, but something higher. Thus the law of hunger must give place progressively to the law of love. The law of division to the law of unity. The law of death to the law of immortality. How beautiful these lines. Romancha bhar jata. Law of division must give place to the law of unity. That's how immortality is path. The law of hunger must give way to the law of love. Such is the necessity, such the justification, such the culmination and self-fulfillment of the desire which is at work in the universe. So, but this is not enough. This is a last step, but that Shurabindu will speak of in the next one. Here he only hints it, so we need not. But the other aspect which we experience here, and that's a small little aspect which we can just touch upon, just one page is left, is incapacity. Again, because this life in the individual wants, always feels all life is one. How does it experience it? How does it even, its hunger can be satiated? How can even its law of love be fulfilled? Because there is a limit. And that limitation is incapacity. Even when we are giving, we reach a point where the container becomes empty. Unless that container is linked to the infinite. That's why Mother says, receive everything from the divine. But then give universally. That's the way it should be. But it's not easy. It takes time. So the third batch is page 208. Therefore, limitation of force, phenomenon of incapacity is the third of the three characteristics of individualized and divided life. First is death, second is desire, and the third is incapacity. On the other hand, the impulse of self-enlargement and all possession remains. And it does not and is not meant to measure or limit itself by the limit of its present force or capacity. Look at Shubhita's word, it's not meant to limit itself. So how do we do it? So he says, if the force could always take possession of its object, always attain securely its end, desire would not come into existence, but only a calm and self-possessed will without craving, such as is the will of the divine. So we go back to the same thing. Again, the Isha Upanishad. By renouncing, thou shalt enjoy all. Why try to covet another man's possession? Tena taktena bhunjita. Because you can never be satisfied. That's why when people say, oh, this happened, that happened, it's inevitable. Whatever is moved by desire cannot be satisfied forever. Even your best food, your most favorite food made by your own mother, which mother's hand, okay, wife's hand also. So you cannot, after some time, you want a change. It cannot satisfy. Even the best food, every day you are given. Like my friend who married, Tamil friend who married an Assamese girl. And first day she made karela and rice. He appreciated it very much. Second day, karela and rice, he appreciated it. Because he had said that, you know, I like karela. Third day, he called some friends that probably she'll make a variation. She made karela and rice. So after 10 days, he said, see, I mean, I know I like karela. I told this to you, but not so much. He said, that's not the problem. The problem is I don't know to make anything else. So you see, this is the challenge of desire, incapacity. So what happens? You go out and you have your choice of food. Now, of course, food comes to your doorstep, all these companies. So, last page, last two lines, that Page 209, 5-6 lines from below above. It would, even in stretching beyond the present, even in undertaking movements not intended to succeed immediately, yet not be subject to desire or limitation. What is it? That is the divine will. Why? Because desire strains, and if it feels, if I don't get it, I will never get it. But the divine will already possesses it. But because it works to create the movement of the universe, the way it is going, it's very interesting. And Shurabindo sent the emissary to Cripps proposal, Duraiswami Iyer, and it was not accepted. And it was not accepted by such words that I personally can never, I mean, forget or forgive. The words used by Gandhiji was, what does he know about politics? Cripps proposal is like a post-dated check. I would ask him, what do you know about spirituality and the vision of the seer? And whatever we went through now, that's history. But the divine will knows. So Shurabindo was asked, why did you send him? You must have known. He said, yes, I knew they would refuse it. So then why did you send it? He said, to do some nishkam karma, because it puts the balance in favor of unity. Karma is gone, that energy is gone, which will fulfill itself. That's why in Independence Day speech he says that the union must come and will come. When he talks about India, Pakistan and all this unified India, it is bound to come, because now when he speaks these words, when he puts his will in favor, that's why he contributed to the war fund during the Second World War. So these are ways by which the divine acts, even if there is no immediate fulfillment because of the play of time. Still the fulfillment is assured in future time. Because he knows it's already, that's how Mother said, India is free. It took 32 years for India to be free. That's why Shri Krishna tells on the Mahabharata war, Arjun, you have won. Pandavas have won. And Duryodhan, you just check out. I'm showing you the result. See where your dead body is lying. But it took 18 days. Destruction of all armies from both sides except 18 individuals who survived at the end of the day. 18 Akshayini Sena was destroyed. So you see, this divine will doesn't strain like desire. Yet it acts. Why does it act even when something will not be fulfilled? Because it knows it will be fulfilled one day, not immediately. But desire in the form wants it now. That's why to learn to wait is a great, beautiful thing. Okay. So last line I'm reading. For the failures also of the divine are acts of its omniscient omnipotence, which knows the right time and circumstance for the incipients, the vicissitudes, the immediate and the final result of all its cosmic undertakings. That's why when Arjuna asks that what will happen after I die, I cannot fulfill this yoga, so difficult. He says, don't worry. Even if you cannot do it, you will come back in better surroundings, better circumstances, better bodies to fulfill what you have started today. That's the great assurance and promise of the Lord. It is the law of creation and the cosmos. We'll stop here. We'll come back after 5-7 minutes and then continue again.